Today I'm sharing a very special Lost episode, which is actually a two-parter. This is from when Emily was still co-hosting the Whispering Gallery with me. This one is about the art and story of Circe and the Oracle of Delphi. So keep those art stories close and your flashlight closer as we step into the Whispering Gallery. Welcome to the Whispering Gallery podcast. I'm Suzanne.
And I'm Emily.
And this time we're talking about the Sorceress and the Oracle. And these women are also known as Circe and...
Circe.
Good. Okay. See, I really didn't research that at all, so it's new.
That's good.
Okay. And the Oracle of Delphi. These women were wrapped in mysticism and further cloaked in mystery. The facts about their stories don't often make it to the mainstream, although academics have been trying to get the real story for years and we're lucky to have their writings to follow and research. So, I've been meaning to tell you something about myself. Did you know I've done some fortune telling in the past?
I had no idea.
Yeah, so I kept predicting snowstorms, though.
Oh,
so
no.
It didn't work out. And
I feel like in Utah that might be accurate, though.
It could be, given our snow yesterday. But when I double-checked, I had grabbed a snow globe instead of my fortune-telling ball.
I absolutely believe it.
So, anyway, after the cheesy jokes, the art is often romantic, and I'm going to cover the Oracle first. And the Oracle of Delphi is often shown seated on a tripod, and I don't know how long she was supposed to be seated on that tripod, but it doesn't look very comfortable. And
absolutely not.
Yeah, it looks more like a hammock-type seat if you think of your camping stools with a tripod support for it. There would be lines waiting, and it sounded like Disneyland pre-COVID. There would be a crew of interpreters to help interpret the message coming from her. It's a mystic hard to define, but also not a singular mystic. And the imaginings of a lot of talented artists, including a couple you probably know, like John William Waterhouse and Michelangelo. And they've produced works about the Oracle of Delphi, and you can find these pieces of art on our Instagram page, Whispering Gallery Podcast. So, who was the Oracle of Delphi? Immediately, the answer goes off down a rabbit hole because I can't just give you her name. The Oracle of Delphi was actually a role. It was a special job in the Temple of Apollo in Delphi.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it ran for centuries. The women working as the Oracle often came from other places than Delphi. So it was a group of women who were brave enough to have that communication directly with Apollo.
Fearless, okay.
No kidding. We'll hit the what next. We go into a lot of this in a little bit, but dictionary.com defines an oracle as a noun, especially in ancient Greece. They say it's an utterance, often ambiguous or obscure, given by a priest or priestess at a shrine as the response of a god to an inquiry. And it's also the agency or medium giving such responses. Okay, a shrine or place which such responses were given, as in the Oracle of Delphi, a person who delivers authoritative, wise, or highly regarded and influential pronouncements, a divine communication or revelation, and any person or thing serving as an agency of divine communication. So that was dictionary.com. The oracle was a woman who, when in a trance in Apollo's temple, would be given questions to ask the god. Or I guess she'd be given the questions before that. But the trance, they say, was induced by fumes coming from cracks in the floor.
Oh my gosh, I read that wrong, and I thought it was fumes from crack.
You're like,
and I was like, I'm sorry, what?
No, okay.
Oh, jeez.
There were purification preparation rituals, and including fasting and other steps. She would go to the Dayton and sit on the tripod. So
it's really cool that fasting is, like, carried through from, like, ancient times to modern religions, that, like, it's still something that you do to show devotion or try to purify yourself. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that is. The site of Apollo's temple and the area the Oracle of Delphi would go into a trance in was excavated, and they managed to get to the room, and there were no signs of cracks in the floor. So,
ooh, we're not divinity.
Not 100% sure what happened with the trances. let's see, the Oracle of Delphi was also noted as Leonardo as the Sibyl. Others have called her the Pythia. And I believe the area was Pythos, the of Delphi, before it was called Delphi. Answering the question of why did they have an Oracle of Delphi, it was to find divine guidance. It was kind of like a focus point for that. That came through the oracle. I don't know their practices as far as prayer and individual stuff, but they did have this main focus point. The oracles of Greece and Sibyls of Rome were women chosen by the gods through which divine advice would be spoken through them. They were popular throughout the great empires, and pilgrims would make their way from far-off places just to ask them a question and receive the answer of a god. This came from kings.edu, Women's History and Oracles. Then, where was this? The Oracle of Delphi worked in the Temple of Apollo, located in Delphi, Greece. The temple was located just a few miles from the Gulf of Corinth and is northwest of Athens. So some of the questions as we get rolling. Given the diversity of the Greek pantheon of gods, which god was the oracle said to commune with? Do you have any idea?
This one was Apollo, right? Because she was, like, at the temple of Apollo at Delphi?
Yes. And then, were the oracles male or female? And for extra credit, were they always virgins?
Female. And I'm gonna say yes, because virginity seems like a pretty big deal back then.
With the purification?
Yeah.
It started out with young women that were virgins, and there's a story about why it changed. They switched it up to 50-year and older women that had already finished having their children grown and all that stuff, as far as that goes, an older woman.
I was going to ask you, I know that the, like, virgin goddesses, like Artemis and, like, Athena and stuff, there's been, like, some stories of them, like, having, like, sexual partners, but, like, the status of, like, virgin is more referred to as they don't have a partner. Like, they're not married, they're not tied down, they're not, like, subservient to anyone. So I think that's interesting that it ties in with when they were bringing in, like, older women.
Yeah, and the older women, I don't know offhand. I believe that they were either, like you're saying, not, I don't know if celibate, or I think they could be married. But, and if it just was during the time when they were working in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
As I pulled the picture together, it's kind of different because there were usually three women, and one would be a backup, and they kind of, like, all seemed like a backup. And as far as the times that they would be reading, it wasn't every day 24/7, so it's...
It's kind of cool. It's kind of like the fates, then, like, as far as, like, the three fates that kind of all, like, bear equal responsibility or kind of, like, share the load.
Yeah, and the three with the tripod and the, you know, kind of a thing, so... Now... You and I have these, our listeners have these, and Delphi, the place, had one too. It's called the Omphalos, if I'm saying it right, and it's called the Navel of the World.
Okay.
So, center point.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so, and last of all, just, I mean, as last of all of these questions or considerations, ancient witches were popping up in cultures around the world. But there was staying power with Circe and the Oracle of Delphi. And I honestly had no idea that it was more than one woman.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either. I thought it was
one. that just was like a medium at the time of great, you know, talent or whatever. In the beginning, young women who were virgins were chosen for the role of oracle, but this didn't stay as the default, and a change was made to women over 50 taking the job. So the information where I got their age and the three women working came from The Oracle, Ancient Delphi, and the Science Behind Its Secrets by William J. Broad. So this is what happened with why they changed this following story is why they changed to the older women. So Diodorus, an ancient historian, recounts the infamy. People say that Echecrates, the Thessalian, having arrived at the shrine and beheld the virgin who uttered the oracle, became enamored of her because of her beauty, carried her away with him and violated her, and that the Delphinians, because of this deplorable occurrence, passed a law that in the future a virgin should no longer prophesy, but that an elderly woman of 50 would declare the oracle.
Well, yeah. Safety first.
Elderly. I don't know if we still consider that. I don't, but...
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, man. What was life expectancy back then? Like, 50 to 55?
Maybe it was less. Yeah. So, one thing to note about the availability of the oracle. Among the purification rituals the oracle went through, there was another that took place that involved sacrificing a goat.
Ooh, not my favorite.
Yeah. If the goat didn't shudder at the right time, everything was called off.
What?
Yeah, I'm like, if it did, things went forward and the smoke went up from the sacrificial fire. Kind of a smoke signal that things were going ahead. It kind of reminded me of, you know, when they're voting for the Pope and the different colored smoke goes up to let people know what's going on.
Yeah.
On a side note, one time when the goat didn't respond properly and things were pushed forward as usual, it didn't go well, and the oracle died shortly after.
Okay.
So, it just...
kind of important to make sure that the goat shudders.
Yeah. There's a story about Socrates and the Oracle of Delphi from the Greeks on PBS. After his service in the war, Socrates devoted himself to his favorite pastime, the pursuit of truth. His reputation as a philosopher literally meant a lover of wisdom, soon spread all over Athens and beyond. When told that the Oracle of Delphi had revealed to one of his friends that Socrates was the wisest man in Athens, he responded not by boasting or celebrating, but by trying to prove the Oracle wrong. So Socrates decided he would try and find out if anyone knew what was truly worthwhile in life, because anyone who knew that would surely be wiser than him. He set about questioning everyone he could find, but no one could give him a satisfactory answer. Instead, they all pretended to know something they clearly did not. Finally, he realized the oracle might be right after all. He was the wisest man in Athens because he alone was prepared to admit his own ignorance rather than pretend to know something he did not. So that was kind of interesting. I've got another one. In Greek mythology, Chiron?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yes, okay. If you spell it like it sounds, Chiron, but I think I'm saying it wrong, was half horse, half human doctor. One could say he was the centaur of disease control.
Oof. It's a real knee slapper.
Socrates, just so we know who he was a Greek philosopher from Athens who is credited as one of the founders of Western philosophy and as being the first moral philosopher of the Western ethical tradition of thought. That's from Wikipedia. I tried to write up who he was. I thought they said it best. So, and then just a quick note, what is Western philosophy, since he's famous for it? Some of these have been a search for wisdom, the meaning closest to the Latin philosophia itself, derived from the Greek lover of wisdom, an attempt to understand the universe as a whole, an examination of humankind's moral responsibilities and social obligations. An effort to fathom the divine intentions in the place of human beings with reference to them. An effort to ground the enterprise of natural science. A rigorous examination of the origin, extent, and validity of human ideas. An exploration of the place or will of consciousness in the universe. An examination of the values of truth, goodness, and beauty. And an effort to codify the rules of human thought in order to promote rationality and the extension of clear thinking. And that came from Britannica.com. They also say this is not an exhaustive definition of philosophy, but in reading that, I don't think I've ever seen so many legit semicolons used in a sentence. I was just like, well done, Britannica. Socrates lived in Athens, though born elsewhere. He lived from 469 to 399 BC, which means the Oracle of Delphi was in business during his lifetime and was up and running from 1400 BC through the 4th century AD. And clearly this was not one woman, as I had always surmised, and I had just came to understand that that role spanned several centuries. So
totally.
So the temple to Apollo at Delphi had to be rebuilt after a fire in 548 BC and again after an earthquake in 373 BC. Historians have offered competing claims as to which temple Spintheras constructed, and that came from Wikipedia. In 1987, UNESCO named Delphi a World Heritage Site excavated in 1891 to 1903.
Oh, cool.
Do you have any questions about...
Not really. I think the biggest, like, kind of revelation for me was that there were, like, multiple oracles. Because, like, I had just always, I don't know, pictured one woman as being kind of, like, the central figure. Kind of like Socrates or, you know, like, how you picture these, like, certain individuals from that time period or from, like, ancient history. And I kind of had always just assumed, I don't know why, that Delphi
was... Well, the pictures are often one woman.
And, I mean, she looks very similar. I think, though, that could have been, during that time, the ideals of beauty were, you know, certain things for painters. So I think that that could explain partially why I think of the Oracle as one person. I kind of think of her as one person just because all of the paintings look fairly, or, you know, like all of the women from that time period look very similar in art history.
And that made me wonder about in looking at our Instagram post, they show a singular woman in the fumes. I have a couple more things I'm going to post before this goes live, but they also show that somebody is quadrant off in kind of like a holy of holies, so to speak, and a Christian kind of thing, but only this was for the god Apollo. And there's a group of people outside, I guess, that are represented as the people helping to sort out what was said to give the answer. And I guess some of the stuff that I didn't cover yet was that the people coming from all over, I believe the questions that would be posed were kind of like businessy. It was kind of put through some people before it was decided what would go to the Oracle. I believe the Oracle worked, I think it was one day a month, and it was something to do with Apollo's birthday or like a day important to him.
Mm-hmm.
National Geographic History Magazine, that's talking about the mystery of Delphi, quest for the Oracle, talks about hearing the voice of God. Ancient sources differ on the exact workings of the Oracle, but it seems consultants would only be able to pose their inquiries to the Pythia, that's the Oracle, the priestess, on the seventh day of each month, since that was believed to be Apollo's birthday. With the window even further narrowed to exclude the three winter months, when Apollo was believed to be away. After cleansing herself and burning an homage to the god, she would go to the inner sanctum of the temple, the Adytum, A-D-Y-T-U-M. The Pythia would sit on her tripod, and Apollo would speak through her. Even this vase depicts the consultant present. It seems that only a priest was there to interpret the utterings from her ecstasy. This didn't make the answers much clearer. They were at best ambiguous, if not totally cryptic. This is from the article Delphi, Search for the Ancient Oracle, and it was by Maria Teresa Magadan. In my reading these other books on the Oracle, I had heard that it wasn't just that one priest, though.
Okay.
That there could have been a group at times. I mean, it could have, like, also being kind of businessy of, like, people involved in the questions, and it sounded like there were lines. I believe there were oracles in, you know, other cities too, but not like the Oracle of Delphi. This is talking about buried treasures and the excavations that happened. There were a couple of different teams that were hitting it. It says also that all that remains of the Temple of Apollo, situated on the third terrace, are six broken Doric columns. Here the Pythia would deliver prophecies to those who came to consult the god.
After taking a good listen to this episode, I had questions. I spent the evening last night digging into Sybil's oracles, the mysterious gases the Oracle of Delphi would have been exposed to when praying to the god Apollo, that also would have complicated things. Would the Pythia, which is a job title, have been so rosy-cheeked as painted by J. Malchewski in 1917? They look so healthy, rosy, and alert. And would they have been so young? Check out Facebook and Instagram to see photos of those two paintings. I'll be posting a mini in-between episode about this soon, about the things I found. In the meantime, take care and keep your flashlights close while visiting the Whispering Gallery.